So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Ladies and gentlemen, all right, welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com, where you can go for all of the latest and anything of the greatest that's going on. For you guys that are new to the show, call in number, as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys on a listening queue, as always, we appreciate every one of you. Just make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad, and we'll get you on air as soon as possible. Dale the Truth is not with us yet. I don't know what's going on. I assume he's going to join us in the very near future. He has been having some problems out his way with traffic, getting home from work for some reason. But in the meantime, man, have we got so much to talk about tonight. And before I get too far with some of the stuff that's going on today, and believe me, you guys are going to be shocked when I give you the latest of what's really going on, I've got to pat myself on the back, folks. Yes, I do. I reported yesterday that Bobby Petrino's deal was done and that he was coming to University of Louisville for his third stint here. Bobby Petrino was an assistant under John L. Smith back in 98. He was a head coach here from 2003 to 2006. And, of course, you know, there's been a lot of personal problems with Bobby through the last few years. But apparently he's coming back and going to make his third stay at U of L. And this time, from what I understand, it should be pretty much a long-term deal. Apparently, there's going to be a poison pill attached to his contract, which will require either an $18 or a $20 million buyout clause in his contract. So if that contract comes to fruition, then, you know, Bobby will be here for a while, which is exactly what Tom Jurich wants as a destination job. Let's say hi to Dale the Truth real quick. An old man, the switchboard is already lighting up. Mention U of L and Bobby Petrino. Let's see what happens. How are you, Dale?
It's a great day to be a Louisvillian, Ed. How you doing?
Well, you know, I've been getting...
As a little bonus, I'm excited, and all the toothless UK fans are pissing the bed. It's great.
I'll be honest with you. I like Bobby Petrino coming back to Louisville, and I've been getting chastised a lot today, you know, by people. But I tell you honestly, I mean, the guy, does he have some personal faults? You bet he does. You
sure.
know, but if we can forgive Bill Clinton...
We didn't hire him to be the preacher at Six Flags Over Jesus. We hired him to win ball games.
Well, that's it. You know, it's not like the sports program has a major effect on our daily lives. It's not like Bill Clinton getting a blowjob and lying about it under oath. You know what I mean? So, you know, and he's a reverend elder now. So I've really got no problem with it. We're going to go to the phones real quick, Dale, because I got a lot of things I want to move on tonight. So we'll take U of L right out of the gate, get it over with so we can move on. 415 number, you're on the air.
Hey, Ed, it's Rob.
Rob, how are you, sir?
Oh, what, are you people kidding me?
No, not a bit.
Bobby Petrino, what kind of crack is Jurich smoking? The man's work.
Why do you feel it? Let me ask you this. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Bobby, has Bobby Petrino sinned on a personal level? Did he screw around on his wife? Yes. Did he lie about an affair? Yes. Which is the only reason he was kicked out of Arkansas. It's not like he's ever had any NCAA violations or anything like that, right?
Well, after the Orange Bowl, the reason Bobby Petrino had to leave after the Orange Bowl is all the criminals he had on the team that Craig Thorpe had to flush out. Craig Thorpe wasn't the coach all those years because he was a nice guy. He was hired by George to be the disciplinarian to run them all out. U of L was on the verge of NCAA sanctions when Petrino took off to Atlanta. That's why he took off. He took
but
off
those are rumors. There's
not, sanctions.
But there's nothing been proven about that. Those were rumors, right? Where's the proof of that? I mean, that's the thing for me, is a lot of people are going through and trying to tell me all of these things
look at,
as
look
well.
At, look, at the, look, at, look at the graduation rates, the incompletion rates, the dropout rates of his players. If you want proof, look at that. How many diplomas has his kids earned? You know,
okay.
Where are these kids coming from?
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, in all honesty, in all seriousness, after everything Bobby Petrino has had to endure over the last couple of years because of the poor choices he's made, do you think that he's really going to come back to Louisville and run things the same way? Or do you think he's learned his lesson and is willing to repent?
No, I think he's going to do he's going to follow his basic protocol. 2 or 3 years, and then he's gone. I mean, this is the last show for Bobby Petrino. Why
so
UofL did this, I have no idea. Great coaches out there.
I disagree with that because Petrino, but here's the thing. Petrino is definitely done in the NFL. He's done in the NFL. The NFL will never take him again. So where else is he going to go? Florida State just won the national championship, so the ACC is a national championship conference. He's got the best possible chance in the world to get a national championship right now, being part of the ACC next year, and with an $18 to $20 million buyout clause, what program other than maybe the University of Texas would put up that kind of money to get him out of his contract? There's not anybody I can think of.
Why would we? What we should have the guy on is it should be the world's stiffest morality clause, a 24-hour babysitter, and a year-by-year deal. We shouldn't be. It should be minimum contract, not $20 million. Where is this coming from? Because everybody knows the man's character.
Well, here's the thing. If you're a university looking to hire a head coach, you're not going to spend $20 million.
Nobody's going to hire Bobby Petrino. Western hired him as a favor because they were like,
that.
Hey, the guy's available.
Well, we all get that. But look at how that's going to work out for Louisville's hero, Jeff Brohm. Jeff Brohm is now going to be the head coach at Western. So, you know, it was a pretty good trade.
For him. I mean, yay for him. But Bobby Petrino's lost his coordinate. Charlie Strong took everybody with him. He's going to have to pick out of people that are willing to associate themselves with Bobby Petrino. A bunch of sociopaths that the only thing that matters is the W's, and the only reason the school matters about the W's is for the dollars. It's not about the education. It's not about college. Let's face it, it's professional football. Now, if Jurich wants to throw 10 years of legacy building out the window to say we have a professional football team, then so be it. And the state better start picking up their workman's comp for all the players.
But you're describing pro sports. I mean, you know, or college sports today. I mean, let's look at Kentucky with Calipari. You know, the Kentucky fans are sitting there laughing their butt off about the hiring of Bobby Petrino. But John Calipari is the only coach in history, to my knowledge, who actually had 2 Final Fours vacated because of NCAA violations. Is that right, Dale?
That's 100% right, Ed.
I'm one of those few people in this state that equally loves both schools, and I wish them both well. But I thought, Jurich talks a good game, but this whole thing with Petrino, even discussing it, puts bile in my stomach. And anybody with a personal code of ethics, you know, should just be disgusted by it. Because
well,
it's open private cheerleader audition every day at noon in the athletic office. That's what it's going to be.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't think anybody out there would say that I don't have a code of ethics. My code of ethics is probably greater than most people you'll ever know in your life, and I prove that daily. But I've got to tell you, this is football. This isn't life. This isn't, you know, my life. This isn't my values or my ethics. This is football. And all I want to see is a successful program, and I think Bobby Petrino can do that. Now, as far as the morality is concerned, am I concerned with that? You bet. But let
Bobby
he who has sinned cast the first stone.
Bobby Petrino's a sociopath and a functional alcoholic that's been burned. There's nothing he can do. We're going to go back to the Schnellenberger days when a football team ran over, you know, downtown Louisville like it was their own personal playground.
Oh, I
you
totally
know,
disagree with that.
For the last 10 years, there's been discipline and nothing but the class coming out of that program.
I'll end it with this because I need to move on with the show, and I got to get Dale the truth here too. But I'll end it with this on my part, okay? I mean, the reality is it's a done deal, so we have a choice moving forward. I'm like you. I equally support all of our universities, Eastern, Western, UK, and UofL. You know, so, I mean, if this is the right choice for the destination job, the question is, do I trust Tom Jurich to make the best decision for UofL Athletics? And in that particular case, I do. Tom Jurich, I think, has done an exemplary job in the, 16 years now he's been here. And you know, so I trust Tom. So I'm willing to give Bobby Petrino a second chance. Maybe it'll come to bite me back in the butt. I don't know. But I'm willing to give him a second chance.
Are you going to trust the guy that's lied to Jurich at least two times? Oh, yeah, I'll be back.
I'm going to trust Tom Jurich. And Bobby Petrino is going to have the morality clauses. He's going to have the poison pill buyout. And there's going to be a leash on his butt. And as long as there's a leash on his butt, I'm willing to give the man a second chance. I mean, that's just the way it is. I've got to move on, Rob. I appreciate the call on it. Thank you so much. Dale, you didn't get much chance to weigh in on that. Why don't you go ahead now real quick before we move on?
Oh, I'm just listening in because I don't know where to start to say that there's going to be open cheerleader competition, whatever that bullshit was. It's pure speculation. And it's insulting to me to go back to Schnellenberger because Schnellenberger was my coach, and Schnellenberger would whoop the caller's ass for saying things like that that's not true. So, you know, we're hiring a football coach. I thought you were going to let me talk.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. You're right.
We're hiring a football coach, not a goddamn preacher. So if people don't like it, tell them to shut the hell up and go back to Big Blue. Let's remember, UK has a damn NBA agent, World Wide West, who blatantly recruits players for them. As you said, and very eloquently, Calipari is still the only coach to ever have two Final Fours taken away. See Adolph Rupp's racist, cheating, stealing, point-shaving ass. They wrote books about it. See, you want to talk about drunks? You want to talk about accusing people of slandering them of being drunks? See Eddie Sutton's cheating, lying, drunken ass. See Billy Gillespie's multiple DUI drunken ass. Do you want me to keep going?
Well, no, I mean, but here's the thing, and I understand the caller's concern. I really do. And there's a lot of people who have the same concern. But I'm inclined to agree with you. We're not hiring a preacher. We're not hiring a president. We're not hiring a congressman. You know, this is a political show. I mean, let's face the reality here. How many congressmen have been caught in the same situation and have gotten reelected? Bill Clinton lied under oath, should have been impeached from office and in jail for perjury, got away with it. People think he's one of the best presidents ever. You know, so, I mean, from a personal standpoint, you know, you're right, we're not hiring a preacher. But I do understand what I got from the caller saying that, you know, that it's going to be open season with the women's cheerleaders or whatever. You know, I think the point was made that Bobby Petrino has now a reputation of a womanizer and maybe a sexual harasser. I don't know. We know these things from Arkansas. We get that. But the question is, how long does somebody pay penance for a mistake that they've made? And so for me, it really comes down to, do I trust Tom Jurich to make the right decision for Louisville? And in this case, I do, because Tom has a history of doing the right thing for 16 years.
Tom Jurich has built UofL. Just look at he was hired as an athletic director by the president to direct athletics. And Tom Jurich has built what was nothing but parking lots across UofL's campus when I was there into one after another beautiful sports arena and stadium and park, from baseball to basketball to football to tennis to swimming to field hockey. And that's his job, and he's probably athletic director of the decade. Like you said, look at how many years he's been here and what he's done. So I just don't get it. I mean, I guess we've got a lot of people, like you said, who don't have any sin, so they like to cast the first stone.
Well, yeah, and again, for me personally, I sin every day, so you know, I'm not the perfect man.
But
never will
these people
be.
Don't add because they have the right to tell you that Petrino shouldn't be a coach because what he did in the past. I'm thinking if Petrino is still with them, then I think if she can trust him, we can.
I think it's really reflective of today's society. I really do, because everybody has an opinion, and everybody gets personal with it. You know, in this particular case, what I'm not looking at this is on a personal level. You know, do I respect Bobby Petrino's personal choices? Hell no. No way in hell could I support his personal choices. But you know what? Do I respect him doing his job, which is what this is a job? Yes. He is a great
football
player.
Like you said, this is a political show. And hell, look at Congress. We have 535 members of Congress, and that doesn't even count governors and state legislators. And we don't even talk about their sex lives, because I know you said that's not something that you want to talk about on the show.
Well, we've got some major stuff we're going to put out here in just a minute. But, you know, for U of L, you know, it's time to look forward, not back. And for those who can't do that, there's really nothing we can tell them. I mean, that's just the way it is. But it's a done deal.
I mean, I'm very excited for Jeff Ross, too. I mean, for the caller to say, whoop, good for him and all that crap. Jeff Braun was my quarterback when I was at U of L, so he's getting a chance now at Western Kentucky. And to say that Western Kentucky hired a football coach as a favor is to say that Western Kentucky is just like U of L's lapdog or something. We know that's not the case. They run their own program down there. Hell, they kicked Kentucky's ass 2 years in a row in football, so Kentucky now doesn't have the balls to play them anymore.
Well, but you also have to admit, this much I got to give the caller, because you also have to admit – so without Tom Jurich vouching for Bobby Petrino, he would never have wound up at Western Kentucky.
I can't admit that. That's purely speculation.
Bobby Petrino
was a
himself.
Football coach with a great history, Ed, and I'm
but
sure
Bobby
he had
Petrino
a word to
himself,
say about it because good friends.
Bobby Petrino himself said that. He
well,
said
again,
that
the only got what's the big deal? I mean, so people don't have contacts in the business world who make phone calls for them. What's the big deal?
Well, no, I'm not disputing it. I'm just telling you. I mean, how it could be afraid, but I tell you, I'm with you on the Jeff Brom situation, because Jeff Brom is a class act. He's always been a class act, and I am very thankful that he's finally going to get a chance to shine on his own, and see where that takes him. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Jeff Brom, what people don't know, this may not have ever been public information. Jeff Brom turned down being an offensive coordinator for Nick Saban in Alabama because of his loyalty. So if you want to talk about loyalty, he was loyal the Petrino gang. I mean, look what happened with Brian Brom. He thought he was going to make millions if he came back because he was loyal to U of L. And then we got Steve Crackhorn came in as the coach and ran the program and Brian Brom's arm into the ground. So those guys, the Brom family is loyal, and so I'm very happy for them.
Well, I'm very happy for Jeff as well. So, but you know, this is a political show. We have to move on to some other things. I appreciate the call.
I guess we have to.
Well, you know, it's just interesting. We'll be able to talk about this. I'm sure you'll be able to talk about this a lot tomorrow night once the deal is finalized.
It depends. I mean, if somebody wants to call in and make crackpot comments like that, I'll talk about it. I got other intentions of how to go with the show, but this is your show tonight, so go right ahead, Ed.
All right. Well, I got to say this, though. I don't think these are crackpot comments. I appreciate the fact that people have their own opinion, and even though I'll disagree with them, you know, I respect their right to it. So, but anyway, let's move on. Steve Beshear went on last night and started talking in his State of the Commonwealth address, you know, about how we need to tackle tax reform, get expanded gambling for new revenue, things like that. You know, but what's interesting here is if you paid attention to the time he was giving the address and everything else, I mean, any applause that he got was very, very lukewarm. It's like everybody knows that this is smoke and mirror stuff. You know, one thing that really concerned me was the fact that Beshear is actually going to work to help get this local option sales tax passed. What do you think about that?
About Steve Beshear and the sales tax? I mean, I think the problem is government's too big in the state. I think if we want to look at a shiny example, we'll go to the example I use because they're always number one in the Mercantile Report for Liberty, and that's New Hampshire. They have no state sales tax. They have no state income tax. They make it up on other things like tourism and property taxes, but why do this to people who have to purchase goods? It reminds me of when the huckster, the Christian socialist Mike Huckabee, wanted to have a sales tax. Why do this to people who have to buy stuff, who don't make the big money that wealthy CEOs make? Why would you want to do this to the poorest people of your state?
Well, I agree with you. I've got a real problem with it, but here's the biggest problem with it. All right, this is breaking news for you guys who haven't been paying attention today. Nobody else is telling you this story, and at this time I have to put this out as rumor. My source is pretty damn good. They've never been wrong yet, but I have to use the term rumor, and in my opinion,
it's true. Before you say it, Ed, whatever it is, I don't know what the story is, but you know the TV station will steal it tonight at 11.
I'm sure they will. But here's what's going on, and this is very disturbing for you guys. Apparently, Governor Steve Beshear has been offered a federal position, a job, working with the Obamacare situation. He is set to take that in about 30 days.
Oh my
Once he takes that job, Jerry Abramson, of course, takes over as governor of the state.
Oh my goodness.
Here's the disturbing part. Greg Fisher is set to become the lieutenant governor to fill out the term of Jerry Abramson, which makes Jim King, your current Metro Council president, the acting mayor of Louisville until the next election. And that makes Vicki Aubrey Welch, your current Democratic Majority Caucus chair, the next council president, and Dan Johnson will take over as Democratic Caucus chair. This information came to me about 2:30 this afternoon. The source is 100%. I will say it's rumor because it's unconfirmed at this time. But I will also say this. 2 months ago, I got a phone call from somebody in the know that told me that Steve Beshear was going to be coming to the federal government early this year to work with Obamacare. I chalked it off, didn't pay much attention to it because I hadn't heard anything like that before. And then today I got the phone call outlining the rest. And here's how it's going to play out. Jim King will file to run for mayor on the last day of the deadline.
Oh, goodness.
So that no one will run against him, and he will basically be mayor by default come November because he will be running unopposed. I have been seeking candidates for the last 2 months to run for mayor. Today I was actually sought out. I got a phone call today from a prominent Republican who has access to plenty of money and asked me to run for mayor here in Louisville this year on a Republican ticket. I will tell you, I haven't made a decision on that because I was caught off guard for it, but I've got 10 days to make that choice, so that's something I will actively pursue right now as far as the decision-making process is concerned. But what do you think about this? Here you've got this governor out here trying to talk about these things, knowing full well he's not going to finish his term, and we've got this Democratic coup going on, if you will, that's going to make sure that the power elite stay in power. And we're going to entrust someone like Vicki Aubrey Welch as Metro Council President or Jim King as mayor, because this is the only way he can get the job. What do you think about this rumor?
Well, number one, I was in a good mood for a few minutes. Take the damn lot there, Ed.
Sorry.
and number two, you nailed this, and I knew all along that Pepaw Beshear was either going to go work for federal government or become president of some rural university a la Flipper Patton, you know what he did. He's making all kinds of money. He's not double or triple dipping, is he? So I knew that he was either going to go and be in the federal government. Why else would he have been whoring out KY necked or Kentucky necked or whatever it's called so much? But it sounds like to me, Ed, don't you think we got a bunch of power-hungry Democrats in this elite class, and they're all wanting to look for a better chair. They're all playing musical chairs on their own little Titanic.
Well, what makes it really fascinating is this. When former Lieutenant Governor Dan Mangiardo stepped down and Jerry Abramson was installed as the next Lieutenant Governor, I told everybody that was the plan. This was a couple of years ago, folks. You go back through the archives and find it, and I prove it. But I told everybody at that time Beshear was not going to finish his term, that this was all by design to make Jerry Abramson governor of Kentucky because it's the only way he could get it, and that we were going to have some major shakeups coming further. So this is something I told you guys was going to happen a couple of years ago. Now it's going to prove true.
I mean, the good news is maybe it'll scare them, and I say them, I mean the people, the listeners, all the thousands and, what is it, 10,000 listeners we get now? Maybe it'll scare some of the listeners into running for office, or like you said, getting some big donors to get a sugar daddy to run for office. That's how the Democratic Party always does it. So people need to remember. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I'll be honest, I was shocked to be getting a phone call from one of those big donors today myself asking me to run.
But the important thing to remember is we have a few weeks left. We have a few weeks left until the filing deadline. So what I was thinking there to myself when you said that somebody like Jim King is going to go in and file on the last day, We've seen people try that crap before. So the important part for people to remember, if they want to file for office, number one, you can always withdraw if you see the cards that you're played and you decide you don't want to go up against candidates X, Y, and Z. You can always withdraw later. But number two, anybody can go down to Frankfort and hang around Lundgren Grimes' office at the closing deadline, just like Jim King can.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you. And that's going to be interesting. So I guess I will put some thought into it. I was very shocked to get that phone call. But, you know, this isn't really about me. This is about the fact that we talked about this a couple of years ago, told everybody how it was going to happen, what was going to go on, and now it's going to prove to be true. So, you know, why is it? What is it about Louisville? And, oh, by the way, there is a deal in Frankfort to on the table to make sure this local sales option goes through. From what I'm being told, Senate Republicans are going to allow the local sales option tax, and the House Democrats are going to give in on the right-to-work laws with a couple of changes. So we're going to get right-to-work in Kentucky and the local sales option tax. That's a trade-off in Frankfort that's going to make this deal a reality. You know, it's very, very fascinating the depths of which people will go to maintain power, because I tell you, I was really concerned. Last week we spoke about the situation with the Metro Council elections coming up, the presidency and the caucus chairs and things like that. David yep. James was the majority the Democratic Majority Caucus Chair, and he faced an election this past Monday and lost to Vicky Aubrey Welch. But Vicky Aubrey Welch wasn't even on the radar. Vicky Aubrey Welch was put up to run for Democratic caucus by Jim King. Jim King made a deal with Dan Johnson to install Dan Johnson as vice chair if he would support Vicky Welch. That came to fruition Monday night. And, you know, the thing that disturbs me about this is the racism is alive and well in the Metro Council, as we know. The vote was 9-7. The Shankman 7 sided with David James. The other 9 Democrats sided with Vicky Welch. But what this ultimately did, because this deal has been known for quite some time, even though I just got word of it today, this has been going on for a while. And what this ultimately tells me is that this Louisville Council does not want any African-American leaders at all, because once you took David James out of Democratic Majority Caucus Chair, there is no African-American leadership anywhere on the council for the first time since we went to merger in 2003. And we're also getting rumors out there today that Rob Holtzman, Denise Bentley, and a couple others are out there trying to get white people to run against the black judges so that we can get black judges off the bench as well. So when we talk about a racial divide in Louisville, that racial divide is alive and well, apparently, in government. Go ahead, Dale.
Well, I was just going to say maybe. I know our good friend Paul is probably following us in the chat room. I know this is one of Paul's big issues. Maybe we can get enough people in the West End to come out of that haze and stupor down there in that part of town, and maybe they'll side with some of the white people. And I'm not saying they wouldn't because they're black. I'm just saying maybe we can unite some people to be against merger. I remember Paul and I talked about on my show some time back about the potential of undoing merger. So maybe they'll see how corrupt this is, that you have a lot less representation since they think the only blacks can represent them in some kind of perverted quota system. Maybe they'll see that they have a lot less representation of their color than they do when they have the old Board of Aldermen.
Well, what's fascinating here is the Democrats continue getting elected because of the black vote. And the Democrats will continue to be the ones who are screwing over the black community. I mean, it's that simple.
Well, what did Abramson, no, you just talked about Mayor for Life Abramson. What was his comment about black people and too many of them in Louisville?
Well, yeah, when he was in West Virginia speaking a couple of years ago, he told people the problem with Louisville was that Louisville, the city of Louisville, was becoming poorer, blacker, and older. So he blamed all the problems on the inner city of Louisville because of poor old black people. You know, and that's one of the reasons, to be honest with you, that's one of the reasons that Jerry Abramson did not run for his third term, because the West End community was up in arms over that. And we continue to have that now. Now that we have this lawsuit against Greg Fisher and Kevin Cosby, and, you know, that brings up a whole other dynamic. Kevin Cosby selling out the African-American community and the black community for his own personal gain, selling out to the white man, Greg Fisher. Now you've got the white Democratic power elite controlling everything, so the black community is completely left out once again, and they still have not put together that it's the Democrats that are causing this problem. That is an alarming thing, man. It really is. But this situation is going to get out of hand pretty quickly. I'm the only one who's reported on it. I'm also the only one who said this was going to happen when Jerry Abramson first got chosen to be lieutenant governor. And mark my words, folks, you can call it rumor for now, but mark my words, it's going to take place. And it's going to take place very, very soon before the deadline for the mayor's election. So
that's why I've been telling people on my show for weeks and weeks, and it's unfortunate that we don't have even more listeners than we do to inform people, because there are going to be a lot of people that come February 1st are going to say, I didn't know the deadline was over. So, this is one of the most important pieces of news there is, that we need to be like Paul Revere sounding the alarm that, hey, you got this deadline coming up in a few weeks. If you want to file, if you want someone to file, get them out there, because there's a lot of races that are still being unopposed.
Well, I totally agree with you there. And I would hate to think that I would have to be the one to file the run, because nobody else will. But I will say this, if it comes down to that point, I will do it. I will not let anybody run unopposed for mayor in this election. It's too important. And, the fact that there would be some major backing really is putting a thought in my head a great deal, but I just haven't had time to digest it. Let's take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back. Don't forget, as always, 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334 are the numbers. And if you guys are listening, you hit that little number one on your dial pad. We'll be right back. Listen to the Ed Spencer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. ErniesPrintShop.com, 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Tell you what, folks, it gets a little crazy around this place, and I think it's just going to stay that way for a while. It's amazing to me what continues to come up each and every day. I got some reports earlier today, and I'm going through now, that we actually have Afghani nationals at Fort Knox training with our soldiers. So we're going to get into that story, not tonight, but we'll get into that in the very near future as well. In the meantime, Dale, we got some really good news, actually.
I'm good.
I know, it's crazy, but according to a Gallup poll, 42% of Americans on average identify as political independents, in 2013. It's the highest that Gallup has ever measured since it began conducting interviews 25 years ago. And it breaks down to 25% identify as Republican, 31% identify as Democrats. Both of those are down, and independents are up to 42%. What does that tell us going forward?
Well, it tells us they're sick of the two major parties doing the same thing. A very wise man who was both a, or I say both, a very wise man who was a Navy frog and a governor and a mayor and a best-selling author and a wrestler, a very wise man by the name of Jesse Ventura, who knows a little bit about both businesses, said that pro wrestling is politics. These guys put on this front, on the stage, that they are big enemies and they hate each other. And then they go behind the scenes and they have drinks together and they talk about what sheep we are. And that shows you those two parties are doing it together. And Ventura is very disciplined. He, I mean, we don't know his voting record, so it proves, but he claims he's never voted for a Democrat or a Republican. And I'm not telling him he would go that far, but we've talked about all the things we need to do on the ballot. And it's a little off topic, but all the things we need to do is stop the straight party voting. You know, hell, take the D's and the R's out in front of the names, make people vote in the name and not the party, because these political parties are no more than special interest groups, and people are sick of it.
Well, I think you're right there, too, because that's one of the things we talk about here in Kentucky all the time, because in Kentucky, you can just fill in that little arrow and vote straight party for everything. So there are so many people that are down ticket getting votes that they haven't earned or don't even know about just because they happen to be a member of a party. When you have to elect the person, not the party, I think you see a lot of major differences in the election results.
I hope that years and years ago, but there's the catch-22. I just corrected myself. On one hand, I would like to say that we would have gotten enough Republicans to say, hey, it's mostly Democrats voting straight party, do something about it. But until the Republicans had enough people in power, and we know we keep hearing about how supposedly they're going to try to take over the state house in Kentucky this year, until we have more Republicans in power, they couldn't do anything about it. And lo and behold, the more and more of them get in power, they probably think, shoot, we don't want to do this now because we want people to vote straight party. So again, they'll look out for each other, because if they do it against the one, then the one might come back and do it against them later, and they got to work together in this professional wrestling match.
Well, that's the unit party that's alive and well, as we know. You know, Harry Reid, look at what they did in the Senate, you know, with the filibuster and all the other things they keep trying to change around. You know, they'll pay for that someday. In the meantime, man, my apologies. I had to cut off air for a second there. This head cold's whipping my butt. In the meantime, we have a prominent Republican that's been put up there as a possible presidential candidate by the name of Chris Christie, New Jersey governor. There's a big story coming out of New Jersey now that Christie may have been involved in a political payback scheme to stop some bridge work, because somebody didn't support him in his governor's race. Have you seen that story?
No, that's about Krispy Kreme Christie is all I call him.
Yeah, that's what you call him, yep.
Krispy Kreme
Apparently there were some emails released today that show that Chris Christie's deputy chief of staff, Bridget Ann Kelly, had deliberately plotted to wreak havoc on Fort Lee, New Jersey, once it became clear that Democrat Mayor Mark Sokolik wasn't going to publicly back Christie in his reelection bid. And what ultimately happened here was Deputy Chief of Staff Bridget Ann Kelly wrote an email on August the 13th that said it's time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee, and it was received by David Wildstein, who was one of Christie's top officials at the Port Authority, and they conjured up a plan to shut down on the very first day of school in Fort Lee, September the 9th. They put up a plan to shut down two of the three lanes on the busiest bridge in the U.S., the George Washington Bridge, so that they could screw up the traffic for the first day of school as a payback for this Democrat Mayor Mark Sokolik for not supporting Chris Christie. Chris Christie, of course, is denying any knowledge of this, but I have a hard time understanding how Deputy Chief of Staff and one of your own top officials don't know anything about this. Do you buy that?
No, I don't buy it. It's just more behind-the-scenes pandering. I mean, it's not surprising, and it's what is disappointing and depressing is that they want to put Krispy Kreme Christie up for president. And I look at this presidential election, and unfortunately we get into presidential elections earlier and earlier, and he's one of many people that they want you to think is some kind of, I don't know how you can call him conservative. What is What is conservative about him? He's conserving all the donuts for his own consumption? I don't know.
Well, you know, it is interesting because everything about Chris Christie screams liberal, not conservative.
Yep.
And it is very fascinating. Of course, he's on record as saying that he didn't know anything about this. It's the first time he's seen it. It's totally unacceptable. He's outraged. He was misled by his own member of his staff. Blah, 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 blah. This conduct was made without my knowledge. I don't buy that because you don't have a chief of staff or any of your top officials anywhere doing this kind of stuff behind your back. The one thing you're going to do is protect your mayor, your governor, or whoever your elected official is. You don't go behind their back with this stuff. You let them know what's going on, and then you get the plausible deniability built up. So Christie's going to go out there. It's going to be interesting to see which one of these two or both, if they both take the fall. But, you know, once again, I mean, here's Chris Christie. This is a Republican governor, folks, so we can't say it's, you know, Democrats this time. So don't think we're not fair here. But this, it's very interesting development out there. We're going to be watching that over the next few days. You know, we've got another story coming out of California, of course. this one is driving me nuts. Do you know the name Sergio Garcia?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Sergio Garcia is the illegal immigrant, undocumented, as they call him today, attorney who sued to be able to get his professional law license so he could practice law in California, even though he's an illegal alien. The California Supreme Court ruled that he could do this. So now Sergio Garcia is legally allowed to practice law. As an undocumented or illegal immigrant, he's not allowed to be an employee for any law firm, but he can open his own business. So he's going to open his own law practice and practice law legally in California, even though he's an illegal immigrant. Now, to my knowledge, you know, if you're a felon, you can't practice law. But in California, apparently it's acceptable. But what this story is going is this. Sergio Garcia announced that he is thinking about running for governor someday. Even though he's an illegal immigrant, he thinks he's actually going to be able to run for governor. This is disturbing to me. This is very disturbing to me because California says a felon can work as a lawyer in a law profession. Are they going to allow him to run for governor?
Well, I guess running for governor, see, I take that a little bit more seriously than I would being a lawyer because I know that that's what usually lawyers do. They aspire to run for governor. But the problem is I'm torn on this story because what he's doing is pissing off the legal profession, and it makes me a little happy when they get pissed off. So,
well,
so I mean, you look at what lawyers do. I mean, look at this crap. The bottom line is people could take the bar exam and pass it, but they won't let you take the bar exam once you jump through all their other hoops. It's such an elite class, and we have all these judges. It ties back into elections. We should not have these stupid laws on our books. Kentucky, you know, especially since that's where we do this show from, that says you have to be a lawyer to then become a judge. Why do you have to be a lawyer and go through that lawyer class and be an attorney? We know what Bill Shakespeare said about the attorneys. He was right. Why do you have to be a lawyer to work your way out to wearing a black muumuu? So I can understand that he's an illegal alien and that pisses people off, but I'm not going to have too much sympathy for the legal industry.
Well, for me, I totally take the opposite side of that, and I'll tell you why, because I know that there are a bunch of scumbag lawyers out there. I know a couple of them, okay? I know that the majority
of the 99% of the bad ones make the 1% of good ones look bad.
Right. And I know that there are, you know, I know that most attorneys these days seem to be ambulance chasers or doing something that is unethical, you know, to get fees. Okay, I get all of that. All right, I don't like the fact that we have things like the Judicial Conduct Commission and all these other people, the Kentucky Bar, who can have these closed secret meetings to decide what kind of discipline to take against lawyers who are caught doing something wrong and illegal. I don't like that at all. It should be a transparent situation. However, for me, it's a big problem when we have an illegal immigrant, an undocumented immigrant, call it whatever you will, who is now able to practice law and argue the law on behalf of law-abiding citizens when they're not obeying the law themselves blatantly. I understand that there's going to be some things behind the scenes that most people don't know about. I get that. But this is a blatant in-your-face, we don't care about the law of the land. How can we let this guy practice law when he willingly, openly doesn't care one bit about the law.
Because well, I'm surprised that they let him do it. I mean, I haven't followed the story too closely, but I figure if they're letting him do this, then he must be having his own kind of funding behind the scenes that are kind of his own little sugar daddy, because somebody must like him to allow it to go this forward for them not to tie him up with red tape and have, as the libertarians call it, a death by a thousand paper cuts, because why have they not just basically red-taped him out of it?
Sure, and where has he gotten his funding at? I mean, to get to the Supreme Court,
exactly.
The Supreme Court, it cost a minimum of $30,000 just for the Supreme Court, not to mention all the hundreds of thousands of dollars you're going to spend getting to that point. So, you know, where did his funding come from? You know, if he's an illegal immigrant, he hasn't been able to work above board to make money. Where did he get financed at? A lot of this stuff brings up some disturbing questions, but I have a real problem with California allowing this in the first place, but more importantly, to think that this guy actually thinks he's going to run for governor and take an elected position when he's not a U.S. citizen, that's scary as hell. And the problem is, I actually think that California will allow it. That's what's really strange. But I honestly think that they will probably allow it. You know, we've got some other situations going on, too. We've got President Obama and all these other groupies out there talking about raising the minimum wage once again. You know, it's interesting because the IRS, we mentioned last night that the IRS just said that they're going to have to cut some programs because they're not going to be able to afford to operate thanks to the new Obamacare tenants and the extra burden put on them for that. But now the IRS is actually going after restaurant workers. Where President Obama and everybody is talking about raising minimum wage, so the restaurant workers now get minimum wage and other low-wage employees get minimum wage, what's fascinating is there's a change in tax policy that went into effect on January the 1st, and it's going to prevent restaurant workers from collecting automatic tips. If you've ever been to a restaurant where you have, you know, eight people or more, it's considered a group, you know, you'll notice on your bill that they add an 18% tip to your bill as part of your tips. So what the IRS is now saying is that 18% is now going to be included in your paycheck. So whether you get 18%, it's now going to be included in your paycheck, and so you're not going to have access to that money for 2 weeks. That hurts a lot of restaurant workers, don't it? Because they depend on these tips every night to tip out, to take home, to provide for their families. Now, if you do a party of eight or more, and a lot of them, that's all they focus on, you know, they're not going to get their money for 2 weeks. How is that going to help them anyway? And they're, of course,
not
going to pay extra taxes.
No, it's not going to help them. And I think we have two separate groups here that people need to realize. You have the restaurant workers who depend on those tips. And sometimes I get a little nauseous about the fact they're working whatever their small pay is. But as we know, it's not something that they're forced into servitude. It's not like the human sex slave trade that we have in this country that they don't talk about in the media, because people who work at these restaurants choose to work there, and they work their asses off for what they get. And to me, it just kind of juxtaposes the restaurant workers to the, I don't know what you want to call them, McDonald's workers. Remember all that crap where they wanted to get a higher raise and they wanted to be given $12, $13, $14 an hour?
Right.
And again, if you've been to a McDonald's lately, it's kind of like punishment. I mean, it'd be nice if the McDonald's big wigs would find a way to just have machines make the burgers. As we've seen in Europe, there's a way to have machines do all this. And we could get them out of there, and you would actually save money if you wanted to buy their genetically modified foods, because the crap isn't really worth what people are paying. So I don't get too upset about McDonald's workers, who rarely can ever speak English when I have to go into one of those places. But the restaurant workers, again, I feel for them because they need their tips. And again, it's just the people at the bottom getting screwed.
Well, it really is, and that's the big problem, because, you know, these restaurant workers, I mean, they make $2.01 an hour. But nobody, it's like you said, nobody's forcing you into servitude. If you don't want to do restaurant
I'm going to make really good tips. I know some of them that make more money than I do as a college graduate. So.
Well, there's a hell of a lot of them to do, you know. And in most cases, you know, the paycheck that they get for the $2.01 an hour, you know, they basically, that paycheck pays their taxes. They don't really keep the paycheck. They depend on the tips to live on, you know. But it is interesting that the IRS is actually going to make it harder for these guys. So while we're talking about increasing the minimum wage, and we're talking about taking more tax money from the poorest people that need it, the people you say you purport to represent. You know, again, it's one of those hypocrisies that I just can't get over. And as we know, minimum wage is a job crusher, not a job creator. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes on. You mentioned the term genetically modified food. I want to get this story in real quick, and I think it's great. But, you know, we've been talking about GMO crops forever. You know, corn, most of your corn is now a GMO crop. You know, there's literally no nutritional value whatsoever in something as simple as corn. But we've been trying forever. There's been a movement afoot across the nation and indeed across the world to get rid of these GMO seeds, to quit growing food with these GMO seeds, these genetically modified crops. Well, turns out, you know, this fight is probably going to be even bigger because the fight is going to come from farmers themselves, not because they have a problem with GMO crops, but because a growing number of farmers are finding out that they can make more money with non-GMO crops, real food, than they can with GMO. According to a consultant and farmer Aaron Bloom, he says the farmers are now finding out they can get better yields with non-GMO seeds, and they also save money up front in the process. So with that in mind, they have now found out over the last 5 years that non-GMO crops are more profitable. What do you think about that?
Well, they're more profitable because that's actually as close as you can get to a true market, to a true market. I mean, the word market doesn't mean anything anymore because it's so perverted with all the government controls and the government stress and the government payoffs. But they're going to see that people want that stuff. There is a demand for it, supply and demand. But the problem is, as more farmers realize that, you have the government getting even more ready to clamp down on it. The USDA, this is a story I was reading over at RT, or at Russia Today, the USDA is going forward with some herbicide-resistant GMO seeds. So they know that the farmers can make more money with real food, and you get this commercial use of herbicide-resistant genetically modified corn, and they're getting one closer step to reality every day, and this is something that supposedly was going to be voted on. Or not voted on, I guess, because the USDA does whatever they want. They don't even need a vote. But this is going to be announced this week that the USDA was going to announce their introduction in limited quantities of herbicide-resistant genetically modified corn. Now, you tell me, Ed, why do we need corn to be herbicide-resistant?
You know, that's a good question, because supposedly the GMO seeds themselves are already, you know, resistant to all these different things, the worms and all the other stuff they complain about. They're finding out that they're not because of the earthworms and all the other things that invade your corn, all the stuff that invade your corn and your other GMO crops have become resistant to that. You know, it's like everything else. Nature adapts. So it's going to be
interesting. I mean, Monsanto is behind most of this, and everything they do just makes the next and the next and the next strain even more harmful.
Well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, what we're finding out, too, is these farmers cannot export their crops. You know, we've got a big problem with Japan and other people across the world refusing to take any U.S. crops because of the GMO. So
yep.
That's pretty interesting. And I tell you, it's fascinating when you look at the big picture here. I remember the phones in just 1 second, but it's fascinating because the cost of growing 1 acre of real corn, the non-GMO corn, according to Bloom, was about $680.95. The cost of growing a same acre of GMO corn was $761.80. So it costs you about $80 more per acre using GMO. So the cost is what's really going to, it's really going to knock this in the butt. And it's very interesting because, according to Bloom as well, you know, if you plant conventional corn, the non-GMO corn, farmers are going to save about $81 an acre per season. So you're talking about a farmer who typically would put out 1,000 acres of corn, let's say, he's going to make an additional $81,000 in profit. So even though nobody is worried about the GMO, ultimately the free market is going to decide to get rid of it. Let's go to the phone, 805 number.
Hey, Ed. Dale, it's Mayo.
Mayo, what's going on, man?
What's up?
Oh, not much. Just with you, the GMO stuff, the two big things on the corn, I'll start on it because you're just talking about it. When it originally came out, it was sold to the farmers, because they were saying, hey, you don't have to use as much pesticide, herbicide, et cetera.
Right.
And for a couple of growing seasons, that was true. But then Mother Nature caught up, you know, just as, you know, things evolve and adapt, and then they had to start spending as much or more money, you know, on the GMO corn than they did on the regular corn.
Yep, right.
And then just this, I want to say this year, but it was actually last year, they announced something probably everybody's seen. I mean, you go into whether it's a hamburger joint or Subway or et cetera, and you get those pink, waxy-looking tomatoes. Well, they had all been bred for uniformity of color, not taste, but look. And then last year, they released a report saying, you know, oh, we messed up because basically, like you had said, there's no nutritional value because, I mean, you know, tomatoes are fruit. It should be a deep, dark color, and one side may be a little darker than the other, et cetera. But that report came out last year, so I thought that was funny.
Well, the funny thing about it, guys, is you go to the store and you see more and more of these foods that are quote-unquote organic and quote-unquote natural, and that's not because the government's making them do it. The government wants them to go the other way, but that's the market demand. They know that's what people want. It is true that the Walmarts and those big conglomerates are in bed with the government. We know about the corporatism that we talk about on Thursday nights, but they also know what the people want, and they know that they put all the organic stuff, if you ever notice, right around the perimeters, around the edges of the store, and all the other crap is in the middle of the store. And that's what people want, is the organic stuff. The government, the GMO people like Monsanto, don't want them to carry this stuff, and you just have to be careful. Back to what the old phrase is, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. But they're selling more organic stuff because that's what people demand.
Well, let's look at
well, here's what I can't understand.
Well, let me put it back to local real quick, too, because if you look at it, you have all these, you know, we often hear about these farmers markets and stuff like that. When you go to local farmers markets, you know, you're buying non-genetic modified food. And these guys are actually growing it on their farms or in their backyards, whatever, and selling it on the open market. But even your local officials, even here in Louisville, they're making it harder and harder for organic farmers to even sell at farmers markets. They're attempting to force price controls instead of letting the market do its job and everything else. Go ahead, Mayo.
No, I'm just going to say, I mean, what I can't understand, maybe one of y'all can explain it to me, and every now and then I'll mess with the person in the produce section, and I'll be like, so this is organic corn, tomatoes, or whatever the heck, you know, they're putting out, and they go, yeah, I said, so just sunlight and water and Mother Nature, and they go, yeah, I said, well, then why does it cost three times higher?
Yeah. They're
not paying for herbicides, pesticides, et cetera. Why does it cost three times higher than, you know, the other?
Why does the only thing remotely close to health food, and I hesitate to use the word health or food, at these fast food restaurants, some salad they put out that's like 3 or 4 ounces, why is it $5 or $6, but the dollar menu is full of all this crap that's probably horse meat?
You got excellent questions there, guys. I wish I had answers. I do have one answer for you, though. This is one of the fastest hours on radio. We're about out of time. Mayo, thanks for the call. Dale, final thoughts.
Well, final thoughts is we talked about this corruption, and I'm still turning my stomach over to what you're telling me. I believe you that this rumor about the Democrats and their power grab, their little musical chairs on the Titanic. Final thoughts is this is why people have to get involved. If you don't get involved at local government, state government, hell, even federal government, if you really have a glutton for punishment, if you don't get involved at these levels, somebody else will. And this is what I've said all along. I don't want a higher voter turnout. I want a more intelligent voter turnout. And it goes for candidates, too. I'm very consistent. I don't want more candidates, but I do want more intelligent candidates. And when you have people running in these elections unopposed, they're going to get their mandate. They're going to get things like Pat Bashir and Mayor for Life Jerry Wundt. They're going to get more corruption that's killing our cities and states. So deadlines are coming, folks, and you can get yourself or your friends or your families or neighbors or co-workers to run for office, or you can lay down the inn because you'll be another victim of the New World Order.
You know, that's very true. I'm very disturbed by the information, too. I would never put out a rumor of that magnitude. I mean, you know, with what we do, you have to put out rumors or sources and things from time to time, but something of that magnitude you don't ever put out there unless you're fairly sure of your source, and this source is 100%. So when I tell you it's going to come to fruition, it's going to come to fruition. And I also told you guys this was going to happen right after the last governor's election when Steve Beshear won. So when it does come to happen, understand there's a lot of us that know these things that can get it to you. But you know, as Dale says, we need educated voters. We need educated candidates. We need people to get involved. You know, you can't have the same people trying to accomplish the same thing over and over again. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Well, right now, our election process is insane because we continue doing the same thing over and over again. To my friends in the black community and the African-American population, open your eyes. These are the same people who have been selling you out right here in Louisville and in Kentucky itself for 100 years. It's time to get involved and make a difference. When we continue to allow one segment of our community to go without proper representation, without proper leadership representation, because of these kind of internal power politics, we've got a severe problem. Well, we've got people like Rob Hostman and Denise Bentley out there. Denise Bentley, former African-American councilwoman and alderwoman, is trying to get candidates to run against black judges. Are you kidding me? You know, where are you people at? Where is everybody at? Where are you people? We're all citizens of Louisville. Where are we? Why are we not standing up against this kind of corruption? Because until we do, we're going to continue getting what we've always gotten. And quite frankly, we're on a fast track to nowhere here in the Noville. So let's get over to Bobby Petrino stuff and start paying attention to what's really going on, the stuff that affects your daily lives. Get involved in the process. It makes a difference. Dale, anything on the agenda for tomorrow?
Well, I hate that I missed everybody last week, so barring any another snowbageddon or ice-mageddon that keeps me in traffic for 2 hours, we're going to talk about another thing that people don't see much in the mainstream press, and that's what goes on in your state government. The state legislature just opened up, so hide your wives and kids. And we're going to talk about some of the legislative alerts and the direction that things are going in Frankfurt and what the bad bills and the good bills look like. So that'll be your civics lesson tomorrow night.
Well, we appreciate it, man. This is tomorrow night at 7 o'clock right here with Dale the Truth and his TNT Thursday Night Truth Radio. 7 tomorrow night. And don't forget our good friend Ken Molman on Sunday night at 7 o'clock with his great brand of Liberty Unbridled. And until then, I'll see you guys Monday night at 7, same time, same channel. Have a great week, folks. We'll talk to you later.